Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. Well, before we do get started, I want to let you know today's program is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. And you can support the show at support.greatdetectives.net. But let's go ahead and get into today's episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the Laird Douglas of Heatherscope Matter, parts 3 and 4.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Lieutenant Steve Howard, homicide. I found word to call you there at your hotel.
Right. I'm an insurance investigator, Lieutenant, and...
Yeah, I've heard of you. Can I help you?
Well, I understand you're the man who handled a murder case at the Bala Kinwood dog show last year.
That's right. We're still working on it.
Oh, fine. Like to look over the setup for an attempted murder?
Oh? Who?
Me.
Stay right there, Mr. Dollar.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Philadelphia Mutual Liability and Casualty Company. Following is an accounting of expenditures incurred during my investigation of the Laird Douglas of Heatherscope matter. And at this point, that name is no joke. Expense account item 3, 70 cents cab fare from the office of Harry Branson to my hotel. It was at Harry's office that I got the craziest assignment I'd ever taken. Bodyguard to Laird Douglas of Heatherscope, who turned out to be a dog. And I mean that literally. A purebred Scottish Terrier who rated high enough in dogdom for somebody to make a couple of attempts on his life. Right now, it looked like somebody wanted me to be next.
What's all this talk about an attempt on your life?
Here, Lieutenant. Take a look at this handbag of mine.
Huh?
Wait, don't touch it.
Huh?
I left it here on this little luggage stand about an hour ago, right after I checked in. Only before I left it, I opened it and took out my gun.
So?
So when I got back, just before I called you, I found the bag as you see it now, locked again.
Oh, now look here, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, I know. But if a chambermaid had been in here, there would have been other signs. You know, bed turned down, fresh towels in the bath, things like that.
Boy, you're a suspicious man. You sure you didn't lock it yourself after taking your gun out?
I'm sure. Anyhow, instead of opening it, I started to pick it up to put it on the bed to unpack. Here now, you lift it.
Why?
Because it weighs close to 25 pounds, and that's too much for nothing but an extra suit, a few shirts and shorts, some handkerchiefs and the like.
You check with the desk?
No callers that they know about.
Well, let me see. Yeah, that is pretty heavy.
And it doesn't tick. Now, look here.
Yeah?
Do you see where somebody on the fire escape used a pry bar to shove this window open?
Well, yeah. And those marks are fresh. Very fresh. Operator, get me Central Police.
Expense account item 4. Check for $29.50 to the nearest Bond clothing store for one pair of trousers to replace those torn by Laird Douglas of what's-his-name when I'd first met him in Harry's office. Item 5, phone call to Mrs. Peter Malcolm Kelly Van Pyton.
Well, don't you worry, Mr. Dollar. If you're delayed, you're delayed, and we'll just expect you here at the Maples when you get here. Your suite is all ready and waiting for you.
I'll be there as soon as I can.
Oh, I do hope you've had a suit made to replace those trousers little Laird Douglas tore. Why don't you have a couple of suits made and just charge them to me?
Thanks. Maybe I'll get around to that. Goodbye, Mrs. Van Pyton. First of all, I had to know what Lieutenant Howard found out about the suitcase he'd had his lab crew pick up. I took a taxi to headquarters. That's item 8, 65 cents.
Well, I'm glad to see you, Dollar. Sit down.
Well, what'd you find out?
Dollar, that bag of yours had enough soup in it to blow out half the side of your hotel.
Oh, then I was right.
Yeah, professional job, too. Straight wire rig that would have gone off when you opened the bag.
Brother, I guess my lucky star is in the ascendant.
What made you suspect a booby trap, Dollar?
Last year and a few days ago, somebody tried to poison a dog.
Well do I know.
Laird Douglas Douglas of Heatherscote, Blue Ribbon Scotty, belonging to Mrs. Peter Malcolm Kelly
Van Pyten, yeah.
Right.
Apparently, the whole reason for it was to keep the pooch from winning the best of show at the annual dog festival, or whatever you want to call it, out at Ballykinwood.
So I've heard.
I think it was more than that.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, don't tell me you subscribe to the idea that if the dog were to die, Mrs. Kelly Van Pyten would probably kick off, too.
No question about it.
Okay.
Well, you don't know her yet, or you wouldn't be so skeptical. Her whole life revolves about that dog. And her money, of course.
Now, from what I've seen, she just throws that away.
Of course she does. At least in small quantities. You know, a thousand or two here or there, even a 100,000 to some school or library or something where it'll show. But even that's only a drop in the bucket to her.
Lieutenant, I don't quite see what you're driving at.
Well, she is one of the remnants of a class in this country, fast dying out, thank goodness, that for generations has been cultured and conditioned into thinking that money is everything, that their whole destiny is to control vast industries, lands, railroads, oil, shipping, and people. People, Dollar, by means of their sheer financial prowess.
But I thought our present tax
situation... Yeah, sure, their day is almost done, but the few who are still around, like Mrs. Kelly Van Pyten, are hanging on for dear life, trying to add to their power.
Hey, Steve, you make a sweet, gabby, eccentric old lady sound like an ogre.
She is, no question. I'm sure she doesn't realize it.
Simply because this whole attitude has been so thoroughly ingrained into her all her life?
That's right.
Oh, well, we'll see.
Yeah, you'll see.
Well, look, let's get to the point. Who do you think might be trying to get rid of the old lady?
I haven't the least idea.
Well, no family? Relatives?
Only living relative is her nephew, Warren Staley.
Ah.
Nothing.
You sure?
Haven't been able to pin a thing on him.
Where can I find this Warren Staley?
At the Maples.
He lives there with her, huh?
Yep.
And you're sure he would be her only beneficiary?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Uh-uh. Good luck, Dollar.
Lieutenant Howard seemed to know what he was talking about. Nonetheless, I decided that the nephew, Warren Staley, would at least be a start. And the sooner I could move in at the Maples, the better. Item 9, 780 cab fares back to my hotel and out to the Maples in the suburb of Germantown. When I first saw the place, I could hardly believe my eyes. It looked like a regular castle perched atop a small hill. Even the gatehouse, nearly half a mile from the mansion, was big enough to house several families. But the mansion itself, wow. A rather stuffy-looking butler, after practically climbing up my family tree, escorted me to the reading room. Mrs. Kelly Van Pyten, and guess who? Whoops! Oh, easy now, Doug.
Oh, Mr. Dollar, I'm so glad you're here. And look, he remembers you.
Yeah,
isn't that sweet?
Yeah, it is. Attaboy, Doug. Easy
oh,
now.
And please call him Douglas.
Huh?
After all, the name Doug sounds so common, doesn't it?
Oh, you really think he cares, Mrs. Van Pyten?
Oh, you're joking, aren't you? Yeah. Mr. Branson said you had quite a sense of humor. Now, did Hastings show you to your suite?
The butler? No, but he took my things.
Then I'll show you. I'm sure you'll love it and be quite comfortable. This way, please.
Yes. You coming, Doug? Douglas? Yeah. Attaboy.
Do you see how happy he is having you here? I am too, Mr. Dollar. Now we just... Oh, Warren, darling.
Huh?
Hello, Santa.
Mr. Dollar, this is my little nephew, Warren Staley.
Warren was 25 or so, bright, good-looking, and well but comfortably dressed. And at Mrs. Van Pyten's orders, he took me up to my suite. Living room, study, breakfast room, bath, and bedroom. And it still occupied only a small part of the second floor.
Now, here next to you are Dougie's rooms. Wow. One for sleeping and one for eating. Can you tie that? The dining room for a dog. And through that door is Mademoiselle Poirot, his governess. She feeds and bathes him.
And that's a full-time job?
Oh, sure. Most pampered dog in the country.
Brother, I'll go with you on that.
No doubt Tonto will ask you to keep this connecting door open at night.
Hey, sit down a minute, Warren. I'd like to talk to you.
Sure. I hope you're impressed by all this.
Are you kidding?
And Tonto will love you dearly. Say, would you like a drink? There's a cellarette here for your convenience.
Holy. Sure. Scotch and soda.
Good. Rather foolish, though, isn't it? All of it?
What do you mean?
Oh, what's such nonsense to keep up an estate like this just to keep pace, so to speak?
Well, she can afford it, can't she?
Are you kidding?
You sound as though you don't enjoy this life of luxury.
Yeah, here's your drink. Enforced luxury to keep up the honor of the family. And I resent it.
Oh?
Without ever having to lift a finger, do an honest day's work. When she's gone, I'll be one of the wealthiest men in the country.
That's bad, huh?
Do you think it's strange that a fellow would like to stand on his own feet for a change, make something of himself, by himself?
Well, why not just pack up and leave?
You don't know Tata.
No, I guess I don't.
Oh, it's really more than that. I'm the only member of this family left, aside from Tata.
So I understand.
I'm the only one left to carry on the Van Puyten Empire. Now drink up.
Wait a minute. Branson used that term, too.
Yes, empire. Not only enough security to sink a battleship, but controlling rights in steel, utilities, and most important of all, East Moreland oil.
I see.
And what's most important about that is that I'll survive to keep control of East Moreland from Kenworthy.
Harrison R. Kenworthy.
Yeah? There's been a battle over East Moreland oil for generations between the Van Puytens and the Kenworthy.
Say, tell me, does Kenworthy have any heirs?
One. His son, Ronald.
I see. What sort of a fellow is he?
Good friend of mine. We waste a lot of our time together. Oh, drink up, Mr. Dollar. I'm ready for another, and you haven't even touched yours.
Yeah, well, listen. I'm going to lay some cards on the table.
Shoot.
Somebody's been trying to get at Laird Douglas, the dog, presumably as a way of getting at your aunt.
It's true. If anything would have happened to little Dougie...
Okay. I'll take your word for it. Now, because of the intense rivalry between your aunt and Kenworthy... Or rather, between Laird Douglas and his pup, Lady Odiddy's Mimi, or whatever her name is. Anyway, Kenworthy should be number one suspect.
When you know him, you'll cross him off your list.
So Lieutenant Howard has told me.
But, go on.
All right. As sole beneficiary of the Van Puyten Empire, as you call it, you come in as fast number two on the list.
I can understand that.
But unless everything you've told me is a fancy fairy tale to throw me off, then...
Everything I've told you is... It's true, Mr. Dollar.
What's the matter with you?
Nothing. Go on.
Okay. And mind you, Warren, I'm not forgetting for a minute that there's been a couple of murders involved in this whole screwy business. Plus an attempt on my own life.
Attempt on your... Dollar?
Hey, what gives you? Are you plastered on a little over one drink?
No, listen to me. I know. Now I know, and I... can tell you, Dollar.
Tell me what?
The answer. The whole thing. Dollar!
Warren, what's the matter with you?
I can't breathe.
Hey, you're... Warren!
Drink. Meant for you. Don't touch...
He died without another sound. I carefully sniffed the drink that had been poured for me. Gingerly tasted it. Nothing. Nothing that I could spot. Yeah, poor Warren had probably been right. Whatever it was had no doubt been meant for me. Johnny Dollar.
Lieutenant Howard, homicide.
Oh, hi, Steve.
Hi. As you know, I've given orders for you to be confined to your suite out there at the Maples until I can get some of the lab crew out there.
You don't think I murdered Warren Staley?
Apparently, you were the only one who was with him when he died.
Now look here, I'm the one who's kept even the family out of here.
What's more important, you're the only one on the whole estate who might be trusted to keep things intact. Any possible evidence. So please, don't leave your room.
Okay, diplomat, I'll sit tight. Expense account, or rather report... submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Philadelphia Mutual Liability and Casualty Company, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in connection with my investigation of the Laird Douglas of Heatherscote matter. No need to itemize expenses at this point, because there are none. The magnificent suite in which I'm parked out at the sumptuous mansion of Mrs. Peter Malcolm Kelly Van Puyten is fine, except for the body of young Warren Staley, Mrs. Van Puyten's nephew, draped over the arm of the easy chair in which he died a few minutes ago. I'd call Lieutenant Howard at homicide on the phone in my room immediately, and within minutes, the nearest patrolman was stationed outside my door, refusing admittance even to the lady of the house. After all, this was the third murder that tied up with the Scottish Terrier who started all this, Laird Douglas of Heatherscote. While waiting for Lieutenant Howard and his crew, I shaved, showered, and changed my clothes. Then, about 10 minutes later...
Well, Dollar?
Yeah, Lieutenant.
See what you mean.
Yeah. He seemed like a nice kid, too.
It's all yours, Doctor. Go right ahead.
Very well, Lieutenant.
Here, Paul, just sit like you do.
Okay, for pictures, Lieutenant.
Yeah, yeah, go right ahead, Sergeant.
Okay, excuse me, Doc. Before we get started...
Okay, Dollar, let's have it. What happened?
Well, Warren brought me up here himself, and I sat him down to ask him some questions.
You suspected him, didn't you, in spite of what I told you?
Sure. As sole beneficiary of the Van Puyten estate, empire, as he called it.
Yeah, well, what do you think now?
That you were right, that he was clean. Anyhow...
My poor darling Warren, where is he? No, take your hands off him, my boy.
Just a minute, Mr. Van Puyten.
No, you can't keep me out. This is my own house, and this is my own nephew, my boy.
I'm sorry, but you'll have to wait until we can get everything clear.
Oh, this terrible, terrible thing.
Mr. Van Puyten, you just wait until we finish.
Just a minute, Lieutenant.
Hey, whoa, young fellow, hold on a minute.
Who are you?
Johnny Dollar, who are you?
Ronald Kenworthy, his best friend. What happened to him?
He was poisoned.
Poisoned? And where were you? How could a thing like this happen if you were doing what...
Oh, Ronnie, just calm down a minute. How long have you been here in the house?
Why, half, three quarters of an hour, something like that. But I don't
see... Where were you?
Well, I was down in the reading room with Mrs. Van Puyten.
All the time?
Len, out in the garden.
Alone?
Yes, except for a few minutes while I talked to Hastings, the butler out there.
What were you doing in the garden?
I was on my way up here by the back way to see Warren. I've always used the back staircase from the garden, ever since we were kids together. This suite of rooms used to be our playroom, ever since I can remember.
All right, all right. Go on with what you were saying.
Well, then about that time, or a few minutes later, I don't know exactly, I heard the police car come screaming up the driveway. That was the first that any of us, Mrs. Van Puyten or Hastings or I, that any of us knew that something was wrong, that something had happened to Warren. But now look here, Mr. Dollar,
all right, I don't... Kenworthy, you too.
What?
You'll have to leave with Mrs. Van Puyten until we're through in here.
Oh, please, Ronald, help me. Help
well,
me.
But I...
Go ahead, Ronnie, go ahead.
All right. Oh, come on, you poor old dear.
Poor old dame. Sorry for her. You finding anything, Doc?
Yes, I think so. I certainly think so. Be with you in a minute.
All right. You better go on with what you were saying, Dollar.
Well, not much more to say, Lieutenant. Warren felt the same way you do, that Branson at the insurance company does. If anything happened to the dog, Laird Douglas, it'd be the end of Mrs. Van Puyten. That the murders of the dog's handlers, caretakers, were purely incidental to attempts on the dog's life. But?
But what?
Well, he apparently was as concerned over this whole thing as we've been. Said he had a very strong theory about who might be back of all this.
Who, did he tell you?
He was about to when this, whatever it was, hit him.
Well, I'll tell you what it was, Lieutenant.
Yeah, Doc? Oh, this is Mr. Dollar.
Oh, yeah, Doc. Dollar.
Norfolk acid. Same thing that killed the two dog handlers and was used on the dog itself. I can tell without further examination.
Wait a minute, Doc, wait a minute. If the dog got the same thing that killed a couple of grown men...
A dog with a much more sensitive stomach, unused to all the strong food and drinks the human stomach is constantly abused with, the dog would immediately regurgitate and retain only a minute amount of the panorphic acid.
I see.
In the case of Warren Staley here, it was added to the scotch whiskey he drank. Traces of it in his glass and in a full glass beside your chair.
Well, Doc, have you checked those bottles in the cellar, right?
Just about to.
Which bottle did he pour that out of, Dollar?
The one right next to that bottle of VO there. Wait a minute. This isn't the same bottle.
What?
Well, the one he poured from was half empty. This is nearly full.
Hey, now, what's the matter with you boys? You let somebody switch bottles a minute ago?
Oh,
wait a minute. Wait a minute. Nobody else came in here besides Mrs. Van Puyten and young Kenworthy?
Hastings, the butler, but he just stood in the doorway.
Sure, that's right, Lieutenant.
Yet somehow, between the time Warren Staley poured those drinks and now, somebody switched bottles. Unless you're wrong about this, Dollar.
No sign of the poison in this one, Lieutenant. It's the only scotch bottle.
You've been here in the room all this time, Dollar?
Yeah, sure. And in the bath, I shaved and showered and dressed while waiting for you to get here. But only after one of your men came and parked outside the door.
Well, where does this door lead to?
Well, it's the dog's quarters, two rooms.
Oh, I see. Come on, Dollar. You might wait for us.
Yeah, I'll be in.
What about that door beyond?
Oh, that. Mademoiselle Poirot, the dog's governess.
Well, where was she?
How should I know? I didn't even meet her.
Come here!
Ah, the Folies Bergère.
Yeah, I guess I should have knocked.
Who are you? Why, you come in this way while I'm dressed myself.
Sorry, mademoiselle. We're the police.
Police? What have I done that you should see me this way?
Well, nothing, ma'am, nothing. But how long have you been there in your room?
Only 2 minutes.
I came in the back way to change my clothes.
Yeah, that was obvious.
It's my day off. I have big date.
Well, not now you haven't. Get dressed and I'll send an officer in to escort you downstairs. Come on, Dolly.
No, you cannot do this to me. I've done nothing wrong. You cannot make me stay here.
Say, Pete, send somebody around the back way to cover the governess and take her downstairs for questioning.
Yes, sir. Hey, Ransom. Yep.
And Johnny, looks like you goofed.
Hmm?
While you were showering, somebody came in through her room, through the dog's quarters, and did the bottle switch on us.
Oh, well, then we're even.
Yeah, we're... What?
You have very carefully mussed up any fingerprints that might have been on those doorknobs.
Oh. Jerry, see if you can get any prints off those doorknobs back there.
Right.
If I haven't wrecked them. But, Johnny, if I didn't know about you and your reputation, I'd peg this on you so fast you'd... You haven't been holding out on me, have you?
I assured him that I hadn't, then went downstairs to the monstrous living room and sat in while we went through a routine questioning of everyone in the household. I even went through the motions of bodyguarding the dog that had started all this and tried to console Mrs. Van Puyten. Results of the questioning?
Nothing, Dollar, nothing. No lead.
Yeah, so I noticed. The two previous murders of the dog's caretakers or bodyguards, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, well, same poison was used then. In their food as well as the dog's.
But why? Why, Steve? Why? Why they? To keep them from helping Laird Douglas when it hit him?
Well, more likely because those handlers had got wind of the attempt to poison the dog and suspected who was trying to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. See, there's one thing you're overlooking, darling.
What's that?
The intended victim of this last poisoning was not Warren Staley, but you.
Oh, brother, I'm not overlooking that for one second.
Yeah, and that's why I asked you if you were holding out anything on me. Because it would indicate that you have a lead, or at least suspicion about someone.
Sure, sure, I got a lot of suspicions. Ronald Kenworthy, his old man, the butler, heaven help us, even Mrs. Van Puyten. Maybe even you, Steve. But when it comes to evidence...
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, I've got work to do.
Looking for the proverbial needle in the haystack was nothing compared to hunting for the poison bottle of scotch that was no doubt stashed away somewhere. Far, far into the night, a regular army of policemen probed and dug and poked around. They opened drawers and closets and cabinets, pounded on walls, looking for sliding panels and secret compartments, went through the trash, sifted a trash heap, dug up any freshly turned earth they could find on the grounds, even climbed trees. Yeah, they prowled through attics and basements, looked everywhere. Result? Nothing. Meanwhile, I stayed close to Mrs. Van Puyten, and I'll say this for her. In spite of her almost silly infatuation with that dog, she showed real strength of character. We sat alone together in the reading room.
I know, Mr. Dollar, there's nothing I can do to bring Warren back. Therefore, there's no point in simply sitting here weeping over him.
Yeah, that's true.
But it isn't easy because it meant more. I'm sorry.
I want to ask you some things, Mrs. Van Puyten. I suppose this is the wrong time, but I...
No, ask me, Mr. Dollar. I think I know what you want to ask, and now... Now that this last terrible thing has happened, I pray that I can help you.
Well, I had quite a talk with Warren before he died.
Oh, I'm glad.
Warren would have been the sole heir to the Van Puyten estate.
Yes, he alone would have carried the honor, the prestige of the family after my passing. Oh, no. Surely you didn't think that he could have been behind those other terrible murders.
Quite frankly, at first I did. But he told me something else, and it's bothered me. About Mr. Kenworthy and his son.
Ronald? No, Mr. Dollar. He was supposed to be Warren's best friend.
You said supposed to be.
Well,
Warren
don't...
made it very clear that if the Kenworthys could somehow acquire the Van Puyten holdings, either by Mr. Kenworthy marrying you...
I have told Harrison R. Kenworthy...
Yes, I know. If Laird Douglas wins the show from his Kerry Blue Terrier, you'll marry him.
Yes.
And I still think it's a screwy idea. But the fact remains it's apparently true.
It's quite true.
Neither you nor Mr. Kenworthy has too many years ahead, if you'll forgive me.
Mr. Dollar, what...
So there's now only one person left to benefit by the death of Laird Douglas, of Warren, of you, and ultimately of Mr. Kenworthy.
Good heavens, Mr. Dollar.
That's right. Ronald Kenworthy. Well?
I know. I know it.
I think you've said enough, Mr. Dollar.
Ronald.
Yes, I heard it all. Mr. Dollar, I think you said too much for, shall we say, your health?
Now, here's our star to tell you about the final intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, all cards are laid on the table. And believe me, the deck proves to have been stacked right from the beginning. Tomorrow, the wind-up. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, I love the name of that, of the governess, Miss Poirot. Miss Poirot, wondering whether the gardener's named, Mr. Marple, and the, family minister is the good Reverend Brown. But I guess it's okay to pay a little bit of homage to the, classics here. We've got a very interesting problem and a very obvious solution, but we'll see if it's the right one. We do turn out listener comments and feedback regarding the last Jack Johnstone serial, The Lamar Matter. And Tim writes in, "I just finished listening to The Lamar Matter. I sure hope that Jack Johnstone doesn't write any more episodes of Johnny Dollar. He just doesn't have the knack. Good grief, he just spent an entire 15-minute episode doing a not-too-interesting dialogue between Johnny and the insurance agent. Again, good grief. There were a couple of good things in the story, though. It was really nice to hear Howard McNear as a regular part, not as a crazy homeless guy, an old coot, or a peculiar neighbor or some such. It took me a few minutes to recognize him as the Chicago insurance agent and good friend of the dead man. The other is that it's always enjoyable to hear Virginia Gregg doing her special brand of great. As always, thanks for all your hard work. The show is terrific." Well, thanks so much, Tim. To be fair to Johnstone, I think that Tim is right in that most of the Johnstone serials have not been up to the standards of the ones that were written originally by E. Jack Newman and expanded, or by Les Crutchfield. He does continue to write episodes under a variety of pseudonyms throughout the show's run. I do think he does get better. I remember, if you remember, about a year ago, a little more now, we played the last episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, and the last episode of Suspense as a special commemorating the 50th anniversary of what is considered the end of the golden age of radio. And he wrote both of those episodes, and I thought his Johnny Dollar was actually pretty good. I think it's going to be something he'll develop over time. This serial is better than the last two, though to be honest, really, it feels like the first two episodes and these two episodes are completely different shows. The first two were just so light and comic. And this one just a lot more serious. So it feels a little bit uneven. I won't talk too much about the case itself because as I listen to these, I begin to remember the solution, and I don't want to spoil it for any of our listeners who haven't heard it. I will say that, if I remember this correctly, there was a key clue that nobody's paying attention to, right now. But I don't know if I'm giving away, I don't think I'm giving away too much with that. Alright, well, that will do it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with Nick Carter, and then join us on Friday where we will wrap up the Laird Douglas, Douglas of Heatherscope Matter. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13, GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.